The book of Isaiah, chapter 53, that is page 596 in your pew Bible. Isaiah chapter 53, we're going to read together verses 1 and 2 of Isaiah 53 as we begin to prepare our hearts to come to the altar and receive the elements of communion. Page 596, Isaiah 53. Let's read together verses 1 and 2. Who has believed what we have heard, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. Thank you so much. You can be seated. You know, Isaiah had the privilege of being one of the prophets to announce the birth of Jesus. We find that in the book of Isaiah, chapter 9, beginning in verse 6, where Isaiah writes these words, "For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace for the throne of David and his kingdom. He will establish and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time onward and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this." But Isaiah was also privileged to not only be one of the prophets to tell us about the birth of Jesus, but he was also one of the few prophets who also told us about the death of Jesus. He was bridging that gap between the birth of Christ and the death of Christ. Before I go any further, I need to say thank you to Aubrey Ann. My sister called me this morning at 7 o'clock and said she had a temperature of 101 and was staying home. And Aubrey Ann walked into Sunday school this morning about 9:40, and I said, "Aubrey Ann, get those fingers limbered up." So thank you, Aubrey Ann, so much. You were instant in season and out. So thank you so much, Aubrey Ann. When we think of Jesus, we see the portraits of him. And he's always painted, you know, with this halo over his head. And he has, you know, the perfect looks. He's strong and he's athletic looking. And of course, he has brown hair and blue eyes, you know, which is way off track. But he looks like someone that you would be drawn to. Someone that you would be attracted to, someone that you would look at and say, you know, that he was probably elected most likely to succeed in his senior class. And yet Isaiah tells us that that picture is not true. He says that there was nothing about Jesus' appearance, his looks, that would attract people to him. That he would be accepted by people because of how handsome he was. He speaks of him as one who would be despised and rejected by men. In fact, Isaiah said he would be like a tender shoot, like a root out of dry ground. You know how a plant looks when it needs water? We have a peace lily, and when it needs water, you know it because it just sags. That's almost the picture that Isaiah is painting of Jesus. He's saying he's going to be like a tender little shoot that is coming up, that the least little wind, the least little heavy rain, the least little thing is going to break it off. He's going to be like a root out of dry ground that just looks like it's just empty, barren, with nothing to offer. It's the picture that we don't think of when we think of Jesus. This fragile little shoot, this root that is out of dry ground. Almost like if you think of a stump that is cut and then there's a little bit of growth that tries to start coming up. That's the picture that Isaiah is giving us. The big tree is gone, and the only thing left is this tiny little shoot that is trying to spring up into life. And to make the picture even more drab and despairing, Isaiah said this tender shoot is springing up in a barren and dry desert. So we would think that the chances of survival are very, very dim. The scorching heat, the noonday sun, the lack of water is eventually going to cause this little shoot that is trying to come up, this root that is on dry ground, that's trying to find life, that's trying to get those roots down into that ground to take hold, is going to be unsuccessful. It's going to fail. Is Isaiah's way of saying that Jesus did not come to live and to flourish. Jesus came to die. And I wonder why. Why would Jesus come in that sort of appearance? I mean, why wouldn't Jesus come as the one who's going to be accepted? The one that, I don't know about you. You may be the biggest Taylor Swift fan in the country. But I'm almost turning against the Kansas City Chiefs, even though they're my favorite pro team because, you know, Carl, they do that. But I'm about to turn against them because I am tired of seeing what's Taylor wearing. Where'd Taylor park her jet? Who's Taylor sitting with? Jesus, if he went to a Kansas City Chiefs game, no one would even notice it. He would be just, in fact, the people who noticed would probably look at him and say, what's that guy doing here? He was not accepted. There was nothing about him that would cause people to be drawn to him. He was the unlikely Savior as far as his appearance. He didn't fit the stereotype of a leader that we have pictured in our mind, and certainly that the Jewish people had pictured in their mind. You know, what they had pictured in their mind was another king like King Saul, because Samuel said this of Saul, 1 Samuel chapter 9, verse 2, said that Kish had a son named Saul, as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel, and he was a head taller than anyone else. That's what Israel was looking for. They were looking for the big buff guy that stood above everyone else, that was handsome, that people were just drawn to, not only because of his magnetic personality, but because of his handsome appearance. What God was looking for was not the big, tall, athletic guy. And he made that clear when Samuel goes back looking for king number two. He goes to the house of Jesse in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 12. And all the six of the seven sons of Jesse come before Samuel, and God rejects all of them. And so Samuel asks Saul, do you have another boy? And he says, well, I've got one. We keep him with the sheep. He says, so they sent for him and had him brought in. He was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features, and the Lord said to him, rise and anoint him, this is the one. And why did Samuel anoint him? It wasn't because he was handsome and ruddy and had all the fine appearance. It was because when the first son came by and Samuel said to himself, surely this is the Lord's anointed, because he fit the description of Saul. And God said to him, man looks on the outward appearance. God looks at the heart. You know, when you think about Jesus, about being the unlikely Savior, think about his beginnings. He was born to a peasant woman. He grew up in the house of a carpenter. In fact, he grew up in Galilee. He didn't grow up in Rome. He didn't grow up in Jerusalem. He didn't grow up in, you know, near the synagogue or near the temple. He grew up in Galilee, and Galilee was not a town known for its celebrities. In fact, one of his disciples, when Philip goes to his friend Nathanael and says, "We found the Messiah. He is Jesus of Galilee. This is what of Jesus of Nazareth. This is what Nathanael said about him. Nazareth, can anything good come from there?" I mean, think of the worst place, the worst town you've ever been in, the most impoverished place you've ever been, and that's what Nathanael was thinking. Nazareth? Nothing good ever comes out of Nazareth. That was where Jesus grew up. He was overlooked by his own people. John said this in the Gospel of John, beginning first chapter, beginning verse 10. He says, "Jesus was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to his own, and his own would not receive him." In fact, he was labeled and he was rejected by his own hometown. Matthew chapter 13, beginning in verse 54. "Coming to his hometown, Jesus began teaching the people in their synagogue, and they were amazed. 'Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers?' they asked. 'Isn't this the carpenter's son? Isn't his mother's name Mary? And aren't his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas? Aren't all his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all these things?'" And now notice the next verse. It says, "And they took offense at him." They rejected him because he was their hometown boy. And they're like, "Who is he, thinking that he can come into the synagogue and tell us what we ought to do? Tell us how we should find God." And of course, we know his ministry was greatly misunderstood. Matthew chapter 20, verse 28, Matthew writes these words, "Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." He was misunderstood. He was misunderstood by his friends. He was misunderstood by his family. He was misunderstood by his disciples, his followers. He was misunderstood by the Jewish religious leaders. He was misunderstood by the people of his hometown. He was misunderstood by the Roman government. He was completely misunderstood. They didn't recognize him. He didn't come in the way they thought he would come. He didn't look like they thought he would look. We had my youngest son, Ryan, and his wife, Kim, and Parker, my oldest grandson. They came over to our house last night. Sherry cooked a delicious meal for them. And I didn't know, but she sent most of it home with them and without asking my permission. So it looks like it's tomato soup for me and Italian food for them, you know. But they came over, and my son, my youngest son, is very involved in politics. When Will Weatherford was the Speaker of the House, my son was his chief of staff, and then he later served Jimmy Patronis, who's a cabinet member, as his chief of staff, and he's all into politics. He's been into politics since he was probably 8 years old. In fact, when he got older, he threatened my older son, who was talking about he wanted to be a doctor. Ryan would say, "And I'm going to be a lawyer, so I can sue you," you know. But he ended up going into politics. But we were talking last night. He got talking about politics, and he was talking about, you know, he said, "You can know the right things to say. You can have you can say the things that people want to hear, and you can espouse the highest principles and things that people say, yes, that's what I believe in." But he said, if you don't have personality, if you don't have that charisma, if you don't have that thing, you know, that people are drawn to, he said, you can get up and say all the right things, but if there's somebody there that says the right things, but they say it with more fire and more charisma, and they're more handsome than you are, they're going to get the vote. And Jesus said all the things that the Old Testament prophets said the Messiah would say. He did all the things that the Old Testament prophets said he would do. He fulfilled all the prophecies You know, born in Bethlehem, raised in Galilee, had to flee to Egypt. He fulfilled all the check boxes that the Jewish prophet said would have to be fulfilled by the Messiah. But because he didn't look like a Messiah, and he didn't carry himself like a Messiah, and he wasn't built like a Messiah, and he didn't have the personality and the, you know, all the features of a Messiah, they rejected him. They wanted nothing to do with him. So why would God choose that? And really, I believe it was for two reasons. First of all, I believe God sent his Son in the way he sent him so that anyone would feel comfortable coming to Jesus. Anyone, no matter their past, no matter their sins, no matter what they had done in their life, a leper could come to Jesus and feel comfortable. A blind man could cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy upon me." A tax collector could climb a tree and say, "I want to see him." A woman with an issue of blood could say, "If I can just touch the hem of his garment, I'll be made whole." Anyone could come to Jesus. They could even throw a woman caught in the act of adultery down at his feet. He could sit at a well, and a woman who had been married 5 times and was living with a man could get engaged in a conversation with him. Anyone could come to Jesus. You could come to Jesus. I could come to Jesus. No matter what was in my past, no matter what I had done, no matter my failings, no matter the areas where I missed the mark by a wide range, could come to Jesus and be received. Paul put it this way in Romans chapter 10, verse 12 and verse 13. He says, "There is no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved." He lifted the burden of trying to be acceptable. He lifted the burden of trying to be pleasant. He lifted the burden of trying to be, you know, seen and come to him in my own merits and my own worth. He lifted all of that off of me when he sent his Son Jesus as just a common man, a common looking man, just someone who would come under the radar of all of those looking for the next coming David. He came that way so that whosoever will could call on the name of the Lord and be saved. What a relief that is to know that I don't have to clean up my act, that I don't have to do my best to change the course, that I don't have to do my best to become a better person in order to come to him. I can come to him, as the songwriter said, just as I am, without one plea. But I also believe he came that way to show me how to accept others. To show me how to look at others. You know, if Jesus would have looked like he came off GQ magazine, it'd be very difficult for some of us to come to him. But he came as a common man so that I could be accepted. And he came as a common man to show me that I can accept others. That if Jesus didn't meet the standard of what the people were looking for, that I can accept you. even though you may not meet the standard that I'm looking for. And you can accept me, even though I may not meet the standard you're looking for. I mean, what a relief that is. That you don't have to do the things that I do. You don't even have to like key lime pie. And it seems to me like that almost ought to be one of the prerequisites to get into heaven. Somebody told me today, I was standing out with my umbrella, and I think it was Steve Bowles. He said, you get two slices of key lime pie. So I want to thank Steve and Becky for bringing me a key lime pie today. I didn't even know they brought it. But Jesus came without any great appearance so that you could accept me, I could accept you. You may do things differently than me. You have a different personality than me. You have a different makeup than I do. You're wired differently than I am. Maybe what my hot button isn't your hot button. Your hot button's not my hot button. But we all come to Him, and He says, I accept you. Isaiah said, He grew up before Him like a tender shoot, like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to Him, nothing in His appearance that we should desire Him, like a root out of dry ground. Have you ever felt that way? Maybe that describes kind of how you're feeling today, like a root out of dry ground. And I'm just struggling. I'm just trying to, I'm barely hanging on. I feel like I'm right at the edge. And yet that's the phrase that Isaiah used to describe Jesus, a root out of dry ground. You know, if someone gives you a cutting or something, most of the time, and I can't speak because I've only received cuttings of Christmas cactuses, but I've never had anybody go to a Christmas cactus, cut off a piece of it, and hand it to me and say, here. They usually put it in water to give it the opportunity to start rooting itself. And Isaiah said, when God sent Jesus, it was like just something being cut off and thrown on the ground so that I could be accepted by Him. We are the ones who are attracted to Him, not because of how He looked, but for what He did. You know, the first Sunday I saw Sherry, I didn't even know her name, but there was something about her that attracted me. It was that spirit, it was that joy that you've all seen. Jesus, people were attracted to Jesus not because of His looks, not because He, you know, fit all the criteria. They were attracted to Him because of His heart. And the burden is off of you and I, because that's what attracts us to each other. We're attracted to the heart. So as we prepare our hearts to come to this table today, this is our opportunity to come and say, God, we may not have it all together. We may not fit the mold. And there may be times, God, that we just don't have it all, you know, all put nicely packaged together. But we come to You. We come to You just like You came to us in and through Your Son, Jesus. Would you stand with me today and take your hymnal? We're going to prepare our hearts to come to the table, but we're going to do so by sharing the